Hi, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am joined by Amir Borsok. He is the head of business development for Relia Sourcing. Amir has been there from the beginning. This is a relatively new, relatively fresh outsourcing firm. They've been around 3.5 years now, but they're seeing great growth, and they had a fantastic 2023. They are now updating their processes. They're embedding AI into some of their functions, and they are really excited about 2024 and the growth ahead of them. So it's a good conversation with Amir. As always, if you're on any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from offshore business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you are already outsourcing, about to start, or are somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your offshore operations. The Outsource Accelerator Marketplace now covers over 3,000 outsourcing firms, representing a global workforce of over 5 million people. We also host this leading outsourcing podcast, publish Inside Outsourcing, and have over 15,000 pages of content on the site. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Also, if you find this podcast interesting or valuable, please share it. We have now produced hundreds of episodes featuring the outsourcing world's most prominent luminaries. Please show your support by sharing this podcast today. So, Amir, you are with Relia Sourcing. Do you want to give us the quick elevator pitch rundown on what you do and your thesis for the market?
Yeah, sure thing. So really, really happy to be here, Derek. Again, Relia Sourcing has come about roughly 3 years ago, or 3.5 now, based in the heart here of Metro Manila. We have three main bases here in Metro Manila between BGC and Pasay. I think Relia Sourcing aims to be as bespoke and as tailor-made as it can be for a client. We are indeed a BPO operation as a service company, and we just aim to, first of all, get quality talent and build a quality team for you here in the Philippines, and then help manage it and enhance performance in the best way we can.
Great. And how hands-on versus hands-off are you? There's a lot of seat leasing in the market now where it's kind of like a WeWork model with staffing. Are you like that, or are you, you know, working more with the client and building out processes alongside the client?
Right. So we're definitely the latter one. We position ourselves as a managed service, as I said, operation as a service company. So we tend to take more of dedicated project, build the process, as you said, with the client, catered to his specific needs, and build a dedicated team for him. And then obviously our internal resources then come about and help manage the opportunity, this collaboration, if you will, in order to get the best results. We have our own internal processes that we've implemented over the years, but we're very open to adapt and adjust to any kind of need that the client might have. And yeah, I think we've been doing it so far.
And what is your ideal client then? If you're managing processes, are you kind of verticalized into one area? And are they SMEs or bigger companies?
Yeah. So, I mean, as of the moment, our clientele is pretty diverse, I should say. So we do have a few main verticals that we usually find a way into, which is the tech and product kind of scene. I'm from Israel, and so is some of the other upper management team. And we grew to infiltrate and enter the market in a big way in Israel, since everyone knows that this is a big hub for a lot of tech startups and product companies. So we have a few there, as well as cybersecurity, which is another big vertical, not just in Israel, by the way, also in the US that we service. So those two verticals stand out. We're also into e-commerce and financial services, and the processes do change between those verticals, as you said. In terms of a company size, we do have a few bigger ones, you know, your public companies with a few hundreds or thousands of employees on one end, and on the other, it can be a nicher, more of like, you know, after seed funding or like Series A or B startup that just got a direction into scaling, just got a direction into optimizing their sales or customer service and success departments, for example. And they either know what to do and just want to do it in a more efficient way here in the Philippines, or they want to explore a different function or revenue stream or a supporting system in order to, first of all, enhance performance, as I said, and then secondly, focus on the main thing, which is their core business, and let us worry about everything else.
Got it. And the journey for your firm then is, you know, you're relatively new to the market. You've been going 3.5 years now. You've seen good growth. How are you differentiating yourself in the market? Like, because there's a lot of players out there now. Did you come in with a specific thesis of, you know, how you could sort of conquer and do things differently?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, first of all, I think the two main factors is we went directly into, and this goes back to the first question we tackled is, you know, I think there's still room and still a gap in this very saturated market for managed services and kind of operation partners, if you will, to add this kind of value to a company is something that not all BPO or outsourcing companies do. A lot of them is more towards the seat leasing, as you said, or more towards the staffing model. People working from home obviously has its perks and dividends and also has its downsides. So we chose this approach and we believe that it takes more out of us, obviously, to, you know, the sales cycles grow a bit longer and the amount of opportunities that you can tackle maybe slims down a bit. But at the end, each opportunity is substantial enough in order for us to grow and to really show our value, which is in the operation itself. And I'll say the other aspect is creating a tailor-made solution. You know, a lot of those companies that are out there are kind of either pricing in advance or giving you a package, or if on the bigger side or on the larger side of companies, they're asking for a certain commitment. So we tend to be very flexible and very bespoke towards the client's needs and really understand, you know, the opportunity and the opportunity's potential and make adjustments from there and see if we can go in a different model from opportunity to opportunity, which allows us a bit more versatility in that sense. So not every opportunity that comes in needs to start with a 30, 40 seater and like, you know, or above that and like a relatively large opportunity or even a 100 seater. It can be something a bit more niche than that. Everyone's from the office also, as I mentioned. So we have a bit more control over that. And yeah, I think this is two things that separates us a bit.
Got it. And how do you find scaling operations when you get so deep into the day-to-day of client requirements? It must be hard because if you have an accounting client that wants accounting services done, you need, you know, very high proficiency in that. If you then have a digital marketing agency that wants sort of funnel management done, then you need very high proficiency in that. And then also, you know, people might want dev teams that need managing. Becomes very complex very quickly. And then there's the sort of gray area of, you know, whose responsibility is what and where do those lines cross kind of thing. How have you managed that in the operations?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, this is why I mentioned the term operating or operations partner. We really aspire to be an extension of the team. And this is definitely comes with a collaborative effort with the client itself. So you touched on the responsibilities and, for example, from training, like this is a common question, like who trains the team initially? And then obviously we'll need some help in order to understand the business model of a certain opportunity and the exact function that they want to execute. So we'd like to have their initial training team, for example, teach us or train the first batch or two of agents or representatives in order to really take a deeper dive into their business and how they do things. And then we can continue from, you know, from a train to trainer kind of model in order to make it easier for them and for us to take more responsibility in the latter stage. So this is just a small example, but I think it really takes a good expectation setting and a certain understanding of, you know, because at the end of the day, we both want this to succeed and we both have a common goal, if you will. So if the client and really understands that and sees the value in that, so he doesn't mind investing, quote unquote, the time and the efforts and the resources in order to make that happen. And then as time grows and the relationship grows stronger, and we take pride in our client retention and the fact that we really create long-term partnerships, the longer you go in the partnership and in the agreement, we tend to take over more and more responsibilities. And this becomes more seamless and more automatic and kind of streamlined for the client, I should say.
Got it. Yeah. And where are you seeing big demand in the market then? You know, the market evolves, doesn't it, in terms of, you know, client requirements. At the moment, like AI and devs are in, you know, heavy demand. And a lot of people are coming wanting sort of AI implemented into their business. Do you get kind of a lot of requests like that are, you know, actually really quite complex and difficult to fulfill?
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, we do. I'll split this question into two, which is the devs and getting this kind of like a high technical, you know, individual or team in terms of capabilities. This is something that 15, 20 years ago, people didn't even look at the Philippines, right? They said, okay, let's go to the other countries that are offering better quality or better talent there. And then, you know, we're really happy to see a certain uptick in that trend and offer those services to our clients. And we do offer those front end, back end, full stack developers, if you will, to show that the Philippines is not just your typical customer service or tier one sales or tier one tech support and the things that everyone thinks about. And in terms of AI, I mean, yes, it obviously it's a growing question. And we are in the process and already implemented some tools to help AI enhance and better, you know, help us better perform, if you will, and help the client in that sense. We still take the stand of, at the end of the day, we'll take some time before AI will completely take over. And at the end of the day as well, people are still willing to buy from people and people are still willing to get support from people. And a lot of those big AI chatbots companies that are trying to resolve tickets, at the end of the day, there's a human touch point at the end. And, you know, for myself, for example, as a customer going, you know, dealing with a bank, dealing with an e-commerce platform, dealing with whatever it might be, I still look for that human touch point at the end to resolve my issue. I think, yes, it is a trend. And yes, eventually probably we'll get there, but we're still a few years away from a complete revolution in that sense. And I think to final touch on this end is in terms of the needs in the market, you know, we see a lot of demand from positions like SDRs and in the prime markets in the US, the UK, Australia. People are understanding that first layer of the sale or the first part of the sales cycle can be definitely executed outside of your office, basically. And not just that, even more complicated sales cycle functions such as demo selling over a Zoom call with representatives of a software product, for example, that things, again, that people didn't think were possible to outsource and not specifically in the Philippines. And we're happy to prove them wrong. And we're big advocates of the amazing workforce this country has.
Yeah, SDRs seem to be popular at the moment, don't they? Like, I mean, kind of appointment setting has always been a thing and kind of pre-sales or early sales funnel has always been a thing. But really SDRs, it's really captured the attention of a lot of people. And I suppose people think that, you know, if someone can just generate X number of appointments every day or week for, you know, the sales guys on the ground to respond to, then that's, it's a perfect recipe, isn't it? But you know, it's getting harder, do you think? Like, it's got to be getting harder because everyone now is using AI, everyone's using bots to reach out. And, you know, is that whole thing becoming a crowded market?
I mean, in a certain place, it does, obviously. It's not like we're going to completely ignore it. And as I said, there's definitely ways to improve for organizations like ours to help the client with better tools and to optimize your processes better with those tools. And definitely, they're doing an amazing job from your OpenAIs, ChatGPTs, or things of the world that you write content with or email blast with, or, you know, those are not secrets anymore and everyone uses that. But again, the latter stage or the more advanced stages, that's why SDRs are such a high in demand right now, because people are looking for that face to see on a Zoom call, or the initial one at least, or, you know, they're enrolling to courses in state universities and they don't want an AI chatbot or an AI agent to walk them through the process. They want to have a human touch point in order to complete something that's a bit more complex, perhaps, or something that's a bit more valuable to them. I think the human touch point and the nurturing of this relationship with the customer is still something that you cannot replace with AI just yet.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw Klarna, came out with a statement saying that they removed 700 employees because of an AI chatbot doing sort of low level resolutions for customer service. And at the same time, Teleperformance, obviously one of the big call centers, their share price collapsed. Like, it was actually halted from trading and dropped about 27%. What do you think on that whole thing? You know, is it sort of the early death knell for outsourcing? And, you know, you guys are kind of just heading into the industry when it's potentially under threat. Like, do you think about those things? Or do you think that the whole AI thing is misdirected?
Yeah, not misdirected, I think. I think there is a point to look at there. And it's at the end of the day, it's an amazing technology that's coming upon us, right? It's like in so many different ways, it can help. I think definitely the first part, which is, I think, the part of where we're currently at, is like help the agent or help the representative or the human touch point, as I said, to better perform. And I think the two can collaborate. It doesn't have to be an agent versus a machine or a robot versus an agent. It doesn't have to be that take. It's more like, okay, what can I do in order to build out a perfect package for a client that looks for cost-efficient, scalable solution, for example, in the Philippines, and he would like to have a bit of both. You know, it's like maybe the first touch point can be with a chatbot that's AI and it's advanced and it's your replacement for 700 agents or whatever that report might say. But again, at the end, I think as you go higher, either in the complexity of the support ticket or the complexity of the inquiry or the sales cycle, I think, again, people tend to look for that professional, to look for that sense of reassurance from a human standpoint. And I think culturally also, it will take time for people to adapt to the fact that they're talking to a robot or to a computer, right? It's like, it will take time for them to fully, okay, I can process this purchase, or I can really resolve my support issue via chatbot or via an AI technology that's not going to be involving any human aspect to it. So I think it's a process. Obviously, I don't know if it's maybe slow death. It's a bit slower than people expect it to be. I don't think you can make a, I don't know how big of an industry, but for example, in the Philippines, like 1.5, 1.3 million Filipinos that you know, are currently working in the BPO space will suddenly go away. I think it's a very slow burn. And I think at least the first part of it, or a good chunk of it, will be a collaborative effort between AI to humans, to agents, to, again, the amazing workforce this country has blessed us with.
And what about your own journey, Amir? Very few people actually plan to get into the outsourcing game. And what brought you to the country and then into the outsourcing industry?
Yeah. So funny story on my end. So I got connected to Uri, our managing partner, who was a dear, dear friend and an amazing professional who was definitely steering the ship for us just before Relia Sourcing came into fruition. And I mean, technically, I was the first hire, and then soon to grow to be a partner and actively help the company when it's set up here in the Philippines. I mean, URI has been here for quite a while now. I joined about 4 years ago since I moved to the Philippines, or just under. URI has been here for the last 15 or 16 years, has an history with the country completely, feels completely home here, and this is his own base. So this is how I came about to move here. And then, yeah, I think I agree. It's not the most common move that people will hear about, a company steps into such a saturated field. But I think given the highlights we touched on earlier, this makes it a bit easier to get into such a market and really find the gaps in where you can bring value and which clients can you service and what is your mainstay really.
Yeah. And what have you seen as, you know, sort of relatively fresh eyes? What have you seen as the opportunities for the country and for the industry? And, you know.
Yeah. I think people are, the narrative around the Philippines BPO space is changing. I think people, when you talk to companies in the US, in the UK, in Australia, in Israel, in Dubai, and in Europe, people have a certain image of what a Filipino agent or a representative can do. And it's so much more than that. You know, it's like from complex sales cycles and sales opportunities to, we touched on devs and that uptick in the trend. And, you know, I think all of these and many more make the Philippines the ultimate outsourcing hub. I think, you know, I might sound biased by saying that, but, you know, I haven't been here for 20, 25 years, so I've been a relatively fresh advocate, but it's the best country to outsource in. The people here, first of all, are amazing, and then they see a big opportunity in the space as well. So if you go to different countries, it might be more of like a stopping station or something for an agent to get by with 2-3 years, or maybe a relatively younger individual that looks for a pit stop. But here, I think the government and the country, credit to them, has really promoted the industry in order to be a real flagship for an amazing opportunity for Filipinos to thrive in. And I think we can see that as the third, I think, biggest contributor to this country's GDP. I mentioned over 1.3, or I think 1.5 is the number now, of Filipinos in the space, which is credible, I think. So yeah, the trend is just, the narrative is shifting. People are understanding that the Philippines can do so much more than they thought they could. And it shows, like the number of highly technical individuals hired in the Philippines rises up. The number of SDR usage here in the country rises. Even with the AI revolution, and even with all the stigmas that might be out there, Philippines stands strong, let's say.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And, you know, I want to get your perspective on this. Like, when I started outsourcing, I was like, my God, this is such an incredible value proposition. And especially when you spend time in the Philippines and there's nothing they can't do, and your clients save so much money. And, you know, everyone is just going to flood to this service. Everyone will get it. But still, you know, I've been in the game, over 10 years, and it's amazing the resistance to outsourcing, to getting stuff offshore. And people have their own routines and traditions, and also their biases, as you say, against Filipinos or offshore workers generally. How have you found that? Was that also a surprise for you? And do you think that the tides are turning? You know, do you sort of see an eventuality where most businesses will default to offshore or global employment?
Yeah, I definitely see. Obviously, I mean, we can't avoid this question, but it is a blocker, definitely. I think the main driver to this blockage is the fact that people had not so pleasant experience outsourcing in the past. Maybe it was in a different country, or maybe they didn't optimize the process properly, or didn't find their right partner for this opportunity. And this led them to believe or think, oh, okay, like, oh, outsourcing companies are like that, or all countries are like that, and all the representatives that I'm going to get in my next function that I'm going to outsource are going to be the same. And I think this is a dangerous mindset to have, because at the end of the day, as you mentioned, it's such a big value add to a company from cost saving perspective. I'll even go out and say from a performance and revenue optimization standpoint, Filipino workforce and like our, for example, our representatives in our center, they prove that they can be at least as good as your American agents and as your British agents and as your Australian agents in so many more categories than in the past. That, yeah, I think I have in my mind a sort of list of functions that I think every business that has scale in their mind, that has growth targets, I think should outsource in order to, first of all, cost save and optimize. And then secondly, understand that this could be such a valuable revenue stream or enhance your supporting capabilities in order to let you where you do best. Like if you're a product company and you're a software company, so this will allow you to focus more on your R&D or your development or your, which you can do here also, by the way, but let's say you don't want to. And I think there's a natural fear of people not being quote unquote in control and not having everyone in the same office in whatever country it might be. And this is the natural hesitation to things of like, okay, so I shouldn't outsource. It will cost me a bit more, but at least I can control everyone. I can see that they're coming to the office. We're in this country. We speak the same language, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But people and companies that tend to take this step realize how efficient it might be, how seamless the transition is. And I think in terms of, from the outsourcer perspective, from the company's end or the service provider's end, we have to ensure that this process is going smoothly and really be an operation partner to the client to make him seem like, okay, this is really an extension of your team. The availability is there, the responsiveness is there, the performance is there. And then all of those factors, I think, will make them feel more at home and more at ease with the decision. And I think over time, you just see that the performance is there. So you kind of stop losing sleep over it, if you will.
Yeah, it sort of sells itself once people see, you know, and once people start and they get the results, like very few ever go back. And in fact, a lot of business owners dump their old business and start outsourcing as a business because they see it as such a powerful tool.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just hard to get those wins. It's hard to get them to be open to the concept and to start and then to get those initial wins. And it's really critical, isn't it? It's hard. It's really hard changing people's minds and
Definitely. Behavior. I mean, this is why I've been losing so much sleep. But I think in general, it really depends on the level of organization you're dealing with. On the other hand, right? It's like it's a startup company, and you know you ran into a founder in a convention or from your network or over LinkedIn or whatever it might be. So it might be a bit easier, but then you get to those bigger contracts and opportunities of a multi-level conglomerate or an organization or an international organization. And then it becomes a bit harder to the point of like, you need to pass so many signatures, let's say, and so many OKs that you need to get from different departments. And obviously finance is not as worried about things as operations would and vice versa. And then you need to get the customer success or sales head to butt in. And then, obviously it's a challenge, but we embrace it. I specifically, this is my main part of being in the company and acquiring clients and onboarding them. So definitely not much sleep there, but a lot of satisfaction when it happened, I must say.
And one of the other big hurdles as well is price and price point. Now, a lot of people associate outsourcing and offshoring with cost saving, but then a lot of them go to the extreme and they think that, you know, you shouldn't pay any more than $2 an hour because they've seen someone on online jobs. Now, of course, $2 an hour doesn't get you quality. It doesn't get you results. It doesn't get you, you know, anyone worth talking about. So how do you manage expectations with clients so that they're focusing on quality and output and results as opposed to saving a few cents? And, you know, how do you get people to pay a real proper price and still save money, but, you know, establishing what a real price is.
Yeah. This is the ultimate kind of discussion at the end. It all boils down to the negotiation on pricing after, you know, a client might see your value proposition. It might see the opportunity at hand. It obviously boils down to pricing. And I think you know, like the world is not getting any cheaper, right? So people have this mistake sometimes when they come into a negotiation with an outsourcer and they say, oh, okay, but I heard that the Philippines or whatever country it might be, they offer services for, like you said, $2 an hour, $5 an hour, $6 an hour. And it's all true. You know, you can get those services anytime, either by an outsourcer or your freelance marketplace that's out there. But at the end of the day, it's all about the results you're going to get, like you said. And I think we make a very valid effort into paying our agents well and making sure we get top talent with experience and worked in the field. And obviously there is a benefit to being in Metro Manila in an office, which is, you know, inevitably going to be different pricing than a staffing company in a province, for example. Both models work, by the way. I don't think that, you know, having a work from home set up in a staffing company based in one of the provinces in the country is a bad idea. It's excellent. It's just a different level or a different approach, right? It's like, I don't think you can get devs or a highly technical individual or a highly skilled salesperson to execute a complicated demo sale or a product sale of a software company in a work from home setup in a province, for example. But they might be more attractive towards the entry level or data entry function, which could be really good. And I think the expectation setting with the client is just understanding, first of all, listen, you can aspire to sell something complicated or answer a complicated support ticket or develop something without paying good money for it. And I think at the end of the day, even if you're paying good money for it here in the Philippines, the arbitrage and the kind of difference in pricing goes to show that the Philippines is trending up as well. And people are getting paid more here than they were paid 15 years ago. Same like people are getting paid more in the UK than they were paid 15 years ago. You know, it's like, I think there's a correlation there of where the economy in the world is heading. And this is just about just setting expectations with a client of understanding what he needs and understanding that it might cost him a different number. At the end of the day, if you can prove value, still the cost efficiency and cost saving is always going to be there regardless of what the price point is, because Philippines is never going to cost the UK or the US, and we're all aware of that. It's just about matching this with the value out that we can offer. Or company can.
It's difficult, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I'm always, you know, I have a lot of talks with a lot of, you know, prospective clients and things like that. And it's very difficult. I find every outsourcing firm I feel wants to become partners with their clients and really give them good advice and get the results they need. Whereas I think a lot of the clients, they don't see them as partners and they see them as people that are trying to sell them something. And then So, of course, if you suggest sort of $15 an hour and they've heard someone offering $2 an hour, they're like, yeah, is this really my partner or are they selling me, in inverted commas, you know? And it's right. So it's difficult. It's really, really difficult, isn't it, to get that true partnership, because I feel if people become real partners, then real good work can get done and you can actually help advise the business as opposed to just providing staffing. And I think so many outsourcing firms have that potential, but there is that, you know, the tension between the client thinking that, because as well, pricing is so subjective, isn't it? You know, like very, very frequently people reach out and they say, how much is a salesperson? And it's like, well, that's a really difficult question. And then they think you're avoiding the answer. But it's like in the US, you know, you get salespeople for $40,000 a year, $400,000 a year, and $4 million a year. And so I put it back to them. How much is a salesperson in the US? You know, it's very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great analogy. And like, I'll take a page out of your eyes book. And he always said, how much is a car, right? Right. Which kind of car you want? Is it a Mazda? Is it a Bentley? Is it a Ferrari? You tell me. So I don't think that's the right question to ask. And I think, yes, it is difficult to build true partnerships, to touch on your point. But when it happens, it's so worth it for both sides, right? Because this is when, as you said, again, the real work can get done and the real value can shine and be completely put on a spotlight and highlight this beautiful partnership that's came along and adds value to both sides and enhances performance on one end and cost saves a bunch. And then obviously lets the outsourcer or the BPO company do what they do best as well. And I think it's just a matter of showcasing that value in the best way you can, you know, it's whether you're on a sales call, and it is a sales call, don't get me wrong, and on the first few touch points with a potential client, and the sales cycle might be longer than you expect. At the end of the day, if you can really showcase with case studies, with success stories, with whatever kind of pieces of data you have to show for, you exhibit what value you can bring to the table. And I think this would be your way in into a long-term partnership that will hold value for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And Amir, so what are the plans for Relia Sourcing in the future? Like, where do you think you'll be in 5 years? Have you got high hopes, high expectations?
Yeah, we're definitely in the hyper growth mode. 2023 has been amazing for us. If I'm being honest, we grew tremendously and we're not stopping anytime soon. We're working on a few things internally, maybe some pieces of AI incorporations, as I mentioned, and a certain element of technology or platform that we're going to launch probably later this year. That's going to, I think, add tremendous value to what we already offer. We're growing consistently. So I think on a monthly basis, there's a consistent trend, uptrend in our headcount, in our client acquisition. And in 5 years, I mean, we have high hopes, but we're definitely optimistic towards where we're going, whether it will be another location or a few of them, you know, if we'll be lucky enough. And then obviously service as many clients as we can and industries that we specialize in, and maybe broaden our vision into other verticals that we can help succeed. Yeah. So in 5 years, I don't want to throw a number because I don't want to go back to this recording in 5 years and say, Amir, you're a fool for saying that. But yeah, we're very optimistic. We have an amazing team in-house that takes care of. Yeah, really, I can't speak highly enough of them. They've been amazing. And I think we can continue to sustain that level because we always say our biggest asset is our people. Like we really believe that. And it's fun. It's fun to come to the office. It's a fun environment. People are pushing. People are working hard. People are collaborating beautifully. Learning every day from each other, from the industry, from the trend, from clients, from successful opportunities and not so successful ones. And I think if we can maintain this kind of mindset, the future is bright for sure.
Well done. And it's good to see so much growth. I mean, the industry is just like growing at such an incredible pace. And despite Teleperformance tanking recently, I think there's just so much optimism in the industry and so much growth and opportunity. So well done. Amir, if anyone wants to reach out to you and wants to get in touch with Relia Sourcing, how can they do that?
Yeah, so reach out to me personally on my LinkedIn account. Amir Borsak is the name. I think it's still the title of this interview, as well as my email address, amir@reliasourcing.com. Our website, which is, by the way, being revamped as we speak, which is exciting as well, reliasourcing.com. Yeah, I think those will be the best ways.
That was Amir Borsak of Relia Sourcing. As always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And if you want to ask us anything, just send us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.